Welcome to this special eight-show series on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. What are you eating, and why should you care? Throughout this broadcast, Mrs. Green examines how true preservation of the planet starts with your fork. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks for joining us today. This is the sixth of our eight-part special series on healthy eating. What am I eating and why should I care? It all starts with your fork. The show is sponsored in part by Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. Their mission is to provide training and jobs to people with barriers to employment, and indeed they are. They're doing great work in our community, and Goodwill Industries is doing great work around the country. Thank them for their support one more time. Before I introduce the remarkable guest we have scheduled for our show, and I want to underline remarkable guest, I wanted to let all of our listeners know that we've launched a new and exciting program for Mrs. Green's World. We have a membership opportunity, and if you are interested in supporting Mrs. Green's work and our vision for creating a global community of people who care about the planet, we would love to have you as a founding member. Trust me on this one. You can read all about it at MrsGreensWorld.com. It's on the upper right-hand side of our website, and I invite you personally to check it out and hopefully decide to click on the Join Now button. So now, as they say, on with the show. Let's get to our truly remarkable guest, who is a powerful and very courageous human being, dedicating her life to protecting our health and the health of our families. Please join me in welcoming Robin O'Brien. Robin is a former financial and food industry analyst who has helped lead a major food awakening among consumers, corporations, and politicians. And think about that very wide net. She has successfully gotten major food companies to respond to her work. She is regarded as an expert on children's health policy, has been called Food's Erin Brockovich by the New York Times, and has been named by Shape Magazine as a woman to shape the world, by Forbes Magazine as one of 20 inspiring women to follow on Twitter, and by the Discovery Channel as one of its top 15 visionaries. So that is quite a warm welcome and introduction. Robin is also the founder of the visionary organization Allergy Kids, which is focused on restoring the integrity of the food supply and the health of our children. Robin O'Brien, welcome and thank you for agreeing to be a part of this very important series on healthy eating. Thanks for being here. And Robin, anybody that's listening to me and has been for the past 6 years know that food and the health of our children is my passion. I come from a health and human services background. So when I get a little over exuberant and over enthusiastic about your work, it's very authentic. So
thank you.
It really is. I mean, I was in the health and human services industry and for about 35 years. And when I retired, what I said was kids are getting sicker and sicker and sicker. We had more autistic kids, more kids with autism on the autism spectrum, obesity, juvenile diabetes, and the list goes on. So you're a groundbreaker, and I'm a cheerleader of Robin O'Brien now. Okay, so let's go on. Your background is you were a financial and food industry analyst, and you asked the question, the very powerful question, are we allergic to food, or what's been done to it? What were you seeing? What happened?
Well, you know, I mean, I was. I grew up in Texas in a conservative family, and I went to business school on a full scholarship and, you know, was recruited by Exxon and Enron. I was not looking for this.
You were not on this path that you thought you were on now.
No, not anywhere close, you know. I mean, I really just thought food's on shelves, somebody's done the homework, it's safe, it's fine. And then, you know, we had four children, and it was one morning over breakfast when our youngest child had this allergic reaction. And I didn't even know what was happening to her. At the time, if somebody had said, you know, what was happening to your child, I would not have been able to say this is a food allergic reaction because I had never seen one before. And, you know, as we raced her to the pediatrician's office, and she said, this is an allergic reaction, and she's asking what I fed the kids for breakfast. And, you know, she starts into this data, just a little bit, of these top 8 foods that children are now allergic to. And all I could think was, since when? Because growing up as kids, we'd all had PB&Js, and we all had cartons of milk. And, you know, here she was listing off these 8 foods. And so, you know, as we took care of the baby and got everything under control with our littlest, I put all the kids down for a nap that day. And the analytical side of me that had been, you know, trained in business school, had worked as an equity analyst on the desk, covered the food industry, all of that went off, you know, and I just wanted to see the data and try to analyze the situation so that I could understand it. And as I sat down that morning, this was in January of 2006, to really look at the data, you know, it was stunning to me what was happening to the health of these kids. And back then, it was 1 out of 17 kids, they were saying, under the age of 3 had a food allergy. Today, that number they're saying is 1 out of 13 has a food allergy. But if you even ask the National Association of Nurses, they'll tell you 19% of school kids have a food allergy. So epidemics and statistics like that don't just fall out of the sky, you know? And as I started looking at this data, you know, I realized it wasn't just food allergies. You know, we were just seeing these soaring rates of autism and soaring rates of asthma. And it just begged this question, you know, what has changed? And as I really started looking into what food allergy is and what a food allergic reaction is, because I did not know, it's when your body sees food as foreign and it just launches this inflammatory response to drive out that foreign invader. And so it just naturally, the question that came to mind was, you know, are these kids allergic to food or are they allergic to something that's been done to it? And when you look at, you know, how this sudden onset of food allergy suddenly happened, you know, just in the last probably 20 years. It's, you know, it really was a question worth asking. And I think what I could not have anticipated was that when I did ask that question, you know, coming at it from this place of, you know, somebody who had had an analytical training but also just the heart of a mother, when I began to ask that question, organizations that I thought would have been aligned with advocacy work and, you know, really getting to the bottom of this epidemic that we were starting to see, they kind of had an allergic reaction to me. And that was really when the story started to happen.
I just have to laugh because you're right. I'm sure, because that was one of the next things I was going to ask you. I'd like to know what happened to your youngest child. Like, what was the allergic reaction that made you, was it a new food that you introduced or was it the actual, you know, I think it was eggs that you had purchased. Was there something in the eggs that, you know, made?
Well, I mean, you know, again, like here I was feeding my kids foods that we had all seen as kids. I mean, it was nothing new. It was Lego My Eggo waffles. I have to admit, yes, it was tubes of blue yogurt. And then it was scrambled eggs. And, you know, again, I had been an analyst, and the guys had me cover the food industry. I was the only woman on the team. I couldn't cook. You know, we'd had all these companies come through our offices, and I just looked at them as business models, you know,
right.
And whether it was Kroger or Safeway.
That was your job.
Yeah, or, I mean, whether it was Kroger or Safeway or Whole Foods, I was just analyzing and deconstructing those
right.
business models. I couldn't cook, you know, even when Martha Stewart, when they were taking that company public and they came through our offices on the IPO, you know, she was handing out cookbooks, and I didn't even take one because I really could not cook. So, you know, I was just one of those moms that was just, you know, doing everything I could to get through the day, knowing how hard it is to feed 4 little children. And so, you know, that morning, that's what it was. It was Lego, My Eggo waffles, blue yogurt, and scrambled eggs. And what, you know, what we realized, what it had been were these eggs. And what was pretty horrifying, actually, was that she didn't even actually ingest them. She started to, and then pushed them away, and, you know, with it on her hands, because she was about 1, of course, was rubbing that into her face. And so this swollen face happened. And, you know, I still to this day don't know why the series of events happened as they did, but I could tell she was fussy, so I thought she's tired. I took her upstairs to put her down for a morning nap, and you know, she was my 4th child. And I never would check on her, you know, excessively. I just thought, you know,
right.
she's a baby. She's my 4th baby. And for whatever reason that day, I went up and checked on her. I do not know why. And when I looked into her crib, her face was swollen shut. And I grabbed her out of the crib, you know, and I had never seen a food allergic reaction. So that didn't even cross my mind that that could be what it was. And I looked at the older kids and I thought, you know, did you guys put something in her face when I wasn't looking? Like, have I missed something? Were they spraying something? You know, what did I not see? And they had these same blank stares, you know, that I was feeling inside, like, what is happening? And that was really when I got really scared. And that's, you know, when I raced her to the pediatrician. So as we got through the first half of that day, you know, got her safe and under control and everything settled back down, to then really sit down with some of this data, you know, and I mean, it was just, I wanted a hard and fast lesson on food allergies, the number of kids, how this was going to impact my life. You know, all I could think was, this kid is allergic to food. I mean, how do you feed a child that's allergic to food? You know, it just, it sounded so hard to even comprehend. And as I started to pull the data, you know, there were statistics saying from 1997 to 2002, there'd been a doubling of the peanut allergy. You know, there was all this other data that started to come out, you know, and I just kept coming back to that question, since when? And really, as I started to really dig, you know, reach out to these food allergy organizations that I thought would be a resource on something like this, to then have the response of this kind of trigger allergic reaction back to me, then, you know, that was really when, you know, at first I stepped back and I thought, okay, I must not have asked the question the right way, or I must not have presented this the right way. I'll try again. And again, it was this very strong rejection, you know, to the point where they started sending out legal letters and they sent out these emails. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm pulling all this information and people are forwarding me all these emails and forwarding me all this information. And, it, you know, I just had to step back and say, okay, I'm not seeing the whole picture here. And so I pulled the financial statements of that organization because I knew that, you know, again, the data and the financials are going to tell their own story. And that was when I learned this, and it's changed since then, but back then, Kraft was the sole sponsor of that food allergy organization's website. And the doctors were listed as inventors on patents for a company called Monsanto that I had never heard of. And so, you know, as I was processing that, you know, it's who is Monsanto and why would Kraft sponsor the website if that's not on the website? You know, the only place I could find that information was tucked away in this little corner of Kraft's website, but it wasn't on the food allergy website. You know, so I was trying to put all these pieces together. And again, I was constantly reaching out. And then, you know, the thing about this community is it's very well connected. And, you know, people recognized early on that I was going to be a strong advocate. I started, you know, Allergy Kids 8 years ago on Mother's Day, and it was, you know, just recognizing this need to really educate and help moms feel good about themselves. And, you know, it is scary, you know, to help them kind of transition. And just to get this kind of rejection and this resistance from an organization that really should be celebrating the work of these mothers, you know, it was really difficult to understand why they would be that way until I pulled their financial statements. And then because the community is so close, you know, other mothers started to say, I've experienced the same thing, where they had this rejection from this organization. And so, you know, as we really started to put our heads together on a lot of these different things, we realized that there was just a lot that this organization was not saying. And, you know, if their sponsors are certain companies, to a certain extent, that does influence what they're able to say or not say. And as I looked at that and started learning about, you know, the way we had pumped all of these ingredients into our food supply, the fact that, you know, in other countries around the world, they had either labeled these new ingredients or not even allowed them in the first place because they were concerned about the allergenicity issue, or maybe there was a toxicity issue, or maybe there was some link to hyperactivity. You know, other countries were exercising a level of precaution with the food supply, especially for children, that we simply weren't doing here in the United States. And I think the most powerful point to me was when I learned that Coca-Cola and Kraft and Walmart and these American companies were formulating their products differently for eaters in other countries.
It is shocking. Like when I started down this journey, and I'm later to the party, it was 6 years ago, my kids were older. It was like, are you kidding me that we're getting the sloppy seconds, that's what I call it, in this country, even in cosmetics and our food, And then Europe is smart enough or more highly evolved where they're getting, you know, go right up to the first class section and then come over here to the USA and get your compromised food supply and crap in your cosmetics. I don't mean to be crass, but you make a really good point. And it shocked me when I found that out. I'm like, this is the United States of America. What?
You know, and I think that was, you know, I think that's why, in a lot of ways, the food movement is such a loaded issue, because it's not just about changing how you grocery shop or navigating the grocery store differently. You know, it changes how you view agencies in our government, and, you know, in some cases it can change a belief system. So it's a much bigger thing than simply how you navigate the grocery store. And, you know, having come out of this really conservative family in Texas, I was feeling absolutely every piece of that. To really have to step back and say, you know, why have they placed a different value on the lives of American kids? Why are they manufacturing and producing higher quality ingredients for families in other countries? Our own American companies were doing it. Why are they doing that and not doing that for us here? And it truly was that double standard where I just thought, it's just completely unacceptable. And as scary as it was at the time, and this, you know, I was definitely one of the first ones out in front on this issue, I had to start talking about it. And I can remember the day that I decided I was going to do a newsletter on it out of Allergy Kids, you know, that it was going to go out to the list. And, you know, it was terrifying because you knew that people were going to say terrible things or not want to believe it. It was hard enough. I mean, I had had, prior to my daughter's allergic reaction, I had had friends and family, you know, on my husband's side, try to tell me, you know, hey, you might want to pay attention to the milk you're buying or the food you're eating. And I just dismissed it. I did not want to hear it. And so, you know, I knew that I would get that kind of response too. But at the same time, I couldn't unlearn what I was learning. And I also knew that no one else had unearthed that information about that food allergy group that I had. And I wasn't really judging it, but I was really, you know, I felt very strongly that it was definitely something people needed to know.
And so where in the process of this journey of yours and helping all of us to understand a really complex issue, I couldn't agree with you more about it's really not just about whether to buy organic or non-organic. I mean, I really get that. So if my research is correct, and I believe it is, you published your book, The Unhealthy Truth, How Our Food is Making Us Sick and What We Can Do About It, 5 years ago this week on Mother's Day. So what was the reaction to that? What did the, from what I can see, the media reacted very positively in terms of getting your story out? I mean, you've been covered, you name it, Robin O'Brien has been on it or in it. Did the national media really care about what you have to say, or was it just a news story?
You know, it was fascinating. I think on a personal level, everyone cares about what I have to say. You know,
I agree.
On a political level, it was very interesting what I was allowed to say. When you really look at a lot of the media channels, and especially, you know, when the book came out, brought to you by Monsanto, brought to you by Kraft, brought to you by Coca-Cola, brought to you by Pepsi, you know, the morning shows, all of these things. And so, to be totally honest, in that first week when we were publishing, there was a lot of back and forth with legal departments about what I was going to be allowed to say, what words I was going to be allowed to use.
You are kidding. In the free press? I'm sorry, pun intended.
To conduct an interview like that was really hard for me because my brain, it's hard to put something in a box like that.
Right.
And then, you know, there were others where we were literally scheduled to do the show and then got left standing at the altar. And that's happened a handful of times through the years with different debates I'm supposed to be part of, you know, whether they're on air or other things. And, you know, I think you have to have the courage to keep going. And as I did, what was fascinating was that personally, a lot of the executives inside these food companies started to reach out. And they knew that I understood the business model of it. They knew that, you know, I'd sat on the desk. And I'd look them straight in the eye, and I basically said, I don't really care what you want to do a year.
You knew the numbers. We have to take a short break. I'm hanging on to every word. I'm sure our listeners are too. Everybody stay with me. Robin O'Brien talking about healthy food and the
Unhealthy Truth. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Bookman Sports Exchange is now open at 3330 East Speedway. We're taking our passion and experience of buying, selling, and trading books and music and applying it to the world of sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear. We are giving you another way to save money on the things that you love, Bookman style. Remember, Bookman Sports Exchange, sporting goods, outdoor, and fitness gear, now open daily from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. on Speedway east of Country Club. Check out bookmans.com for more info.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we're certainly giving you a lot to think about today. If you've just joined me, our guest today for the sixth of our eight-part series on healthy eating, what am I eating and why should I care? It all starts with your fork, is a woman who truly believes that. Her name is Robin O'Brien. She is a former financial and food industry analyst who has helped lead a major food awakening in this country among consumers, corporations, and politicians. She is truly regarded as an expert on children's health policy. She has been called the food's Erin Brockovich, and I have to say again, Robin, I love that because it certainly gives people an idea for how unstoppable you are. And you are truly a visionary, and I thank you again for joining us. So let's go on with how the media reacted, corporate people starting to, you know, to reach out to you, because to me, you were the perfect storm. And
I say you were the perfect storm.
You had the facts and the emotion and the power of being a mom behind you. So talk about compelling and powerful. Here comes the perfect storm.
I mean, you know, it was fascinating. I was interviewed by the New York Times in 2008, and I mean, she was really honest. She came out and she said, I didn't really know what to expect. This is a huge story, and she said, you really are their worst nightmare.
And you not know, some it, crazy but, mom going off. You had the facts.
No, and
you had the financials.
And you know, it's been fascinating, and I think, you know, I really do get the pressure that these companies are under. I mean, we were on the other side. We put that pressure on them. And I think really what we're starting to see is this inflection point where even these companies themselves, the healthcare costs in this country are spiraling out of control. And it's due to a lot of reasons, but a huge driving factor is the health of our country is eroding. And that is horrible, and it's hard to hear, and nobody really wants to talk about it because it's just sad. But when you really look at the data, the President's Cancer Panel says 41% of us are expected to get cancer. That's 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women. 67% of Americans are obese or overweight. You look at the data on kids, and it's 1 in 3 kids has autism, allergies, ADHD, or asthma. The autism numbers went up 30% in the last 2 years. 1 in 13 now has food allergies. That number is 19% of kids have food allergies that are school age, according to the Nurses Association, and those people are on the front line. And you start to put all this data together. So, you know, we're talking about diabetes over here on the one hand. We're talking about cancer over here on the other hand. We're talking about asthma, 1 in 10 kids. Allergies, 1 in 13 kids. Autism, 1 in 68 kids. You put all that together, and those kids have earned the title of Generation RX. And you look at the impact that is having not only on our families personally and the healthcare costs that are associated with it. I mean, CNN and Time did a study, and they said the cost of having one child with food allergies for the year is an additional $4,200 per kid. You know, and you look at that personally, how it's affecting families, but it's also affecting corporations who are struggling with healthcare costs. And then on top of that, you know, ultimately this hammers our economy. And
It is hammering our economy. It's beating it to death.
Right, and there are reports that basically compare healthcare spending around the world. And the U.S. spends about 2.5 times more on healthcare and disease management than any of our trading partners or any of these other developed countries. And when you look at that, when you consider the fact that we're spending 2.5 times more, you would think that we would be getting the results from that, but we're not. We're sicker in a lot of ways than a lot of other countries, and we're really struggling with a lot of these conditions and how it's impacting kids in school, how it's impacting corporations, how it's impacting, you know, productivity in the workplace. I mean, time lost from work, either because you're sick or because you're dealing with a sick kid. And as I really kind of went big picture on it and really looked, okay, this is what we're seeing in our family, this is what friends and family are seeing there, and then you start to see it in corporations and, you know, entrepreneurs are dealing with this. And that was when all of a sudden I realized this is a hugely patriotic movement, because one of the smartest things we can be doing is protecting the health of our families, because that ultimately is protecting the health of our economy. And then that allows us, you know, to do our best work in the global marketplace, to be the most productive, to be the most innovative, and to create the things, you know, that will truly drive change. But, you know, I if you really look at it, right now we're spending 18 cents of every dollar on healthcare and disease management, and we're spending 9 cents of every dollar on food.
And how much, you know, on prevention? It probably doesn't even show up in the scale. I mean, doing what I did for most of my life, we put money into juvenile correction facilities, into high-end residential treatment, and the smallest part of the state budget year after year was prevention. No prevention dollars. Let's treat them after they have really gotten deep into the system and are deeply damaged. So that's 30 years of my history. So just repeat it again, 18 cents of every dollar on health care and 9 cents on, I was trying to write it down so I can use it on Twitter.
Yeah, 9 cents on food. And
nine
so, you know, we
on
spend
food.
Twice
okay.
as much on health care and disease management as we do on food. And, you know, what if we shifted that? You know, what if that shifted just a little bit? Just a little bit. What if all Americans ate just a little bit better, you know? But in order for that to happen, you know, that gets to another big picture issue, and that's the fact that we do as a country have a big national food budget, all of us together. And, you know, whether we knew it or not, which I didn't really know this until I did a deep dive into it, whether you know it or not, you know, our national taxpayer dollars get put in a pot, and part of that gets handed out to farmers. And the farmers that it gets given to are the farmers that are using this operating system with these genetically engineered ingredients and all these chemicals that are applied to the crops. They get subsidies, so they get financial support to grow those crops. And then on top of that, they get marketing support and they get insurance support. So financially, they get a ton of support if they opt into that chemically intensive operating system that was introduced in the 1990s. On the other hand, the farmers that are growing things organically, which means by law without these genetically engineered
right.
ingredients and all the chemicals that are required to grow them, those farmers growing things organically are charged fees to prove that their stuff is safe, and then on top of that, they're charged fees to label it. So their whole cost of production is higher, and they don't get the marketing support, and they don't get the insurance support. So they're out of pocket on a lot more things. So people will say, well, you know, organic's a lot more expensive. It's because it's not supported. There's not a level playing field at the farm.
At all.
And I
like,
think if you were to ask any American, would you level that playing field so that you could afford, so that, you know, organic was equally as affordable as conventional food? They would say yes. And I think part of the reason that organic is such a lightning rod debate is because it is more expensive. So it gets into this kind of haves and have not feeling. And if it were truly neutral, if there was a true equilibrium on the farm, Americans would be choosing organic food because, you know, we know enough at this point to know that we shouldn't be eating these excessive levels of the pesticides that are being poured onto our food. We're the only developed country in the world that allowed for this artificial growth hormone to go into our dairy. You know, countries around the world have said, let's get these artificial dyes out of kids' foods. In organic food, none of that stuff is allowed. And so, you know, what we call organic food, largely the rest of the world just calls it food. And they label the stuff that's got the genetically engineered ingredients in it, and then they kick out, you know, these artificial growth hormones and artificial dyes.
And I want to ask you this question because it came up 10 times when I was doing my research about you and preparing for the show. there's two parts to this. One is, you know, you've been described by people as an unlikely candidate to lead what would be called an anti-establishment crusade because you come from a conservative family in Houston, you know, an MBA mother of four, analytical mind. This is what confuses me as a human being. Why does public policy get defined around in the political conversation? Because if I'm a conservative or a liberal or a moderate, does that define the way that I want to eat or feed my children? It's one of the things that's really skewed as far as I'm concerned. Why does it end up in the political arena? And we have an expression around here in Mrs. Green's world. If it's not about the money, it's about the money. In the United States, it seems as though it's about the money. It's about Monsanto having the bigger budget, the bigger bullying stick, the more politicians in their pocket on both sides of the aisle. I can't find any true heroes that are pure. I'm sure they're out there. But that's a long question, but you get it. Why is it that you, who came from a conservative background, cannot be this unbelievable perfect storm crusader for health? Why does it have to be a political conversation?
You know, I think what it really boils down to, if you had to divide it politically, is this issue around regulation, you know?
Yes.
And that, you know, one party tends to lean towards more regulation and the other tends to lean towards less. And I think, you know, ultimately, for a free market to work, which, you know, again, that's where they come out of the capital markets, you have to have transparency and you have to have the information.
Right.
And so the industry will say, you know, when these genetically engineered ingredients were introduced, they've been more tested than anything else, you know, well, no long-term human health studies exist. And 60% of the world's population, based on the science that does exist and based on the huge amount of science that does not yet exist, 60% of the world's population has said, we're going to label these things because we just don't know. We don't know what it's going to do to a child with autism or a mother that's pregnant or an adult that has early onset Alzheimer's. We don't know, so we're going to label it so that people can make an informed choice. And what we do know is that, you know, with the introduction of these crops in the 1990s, there was a 527 million pound increase in the herbicides, which are the weed killers that are applied to them. You know, so
I think they should label it, eat your Roundup Ready lettuce here. Get your Roundup Ready apples here. It's like, I mean, do you want to eat something that's called Roundup Ready?
Right. And, if you look at the corn, for example,
right,
when it was genetically engineered, to literally produce its own insecticidal toxin. So rather than spray it on the corn, it was engineered into the corn so that it can release it as it grows. And on the one hand, the industry claims that it's substantially equivalent, more or less the same as corn that has existed for thousands of years. On the other hand, the EPA sees it as so different that they actually regulate it now as a pesticide, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office also sees it so different that they've granted patent to protect the invention and the novelty of it. So which is it? Who are they telling the truth to?
I asked the analyst.
You know, and so I step back from that and I think, again, food is not a partisan issue. We all eat. This is nonpartisan. And coming out of this conservative family, I thought, you know, the most conservative thing we can be doing is protecting the health of our family and staying out of the health care.
Truly, truly.
And the only way that you can do that is when you have complete information. And so, you know, I look at maybe, you know, in the early years of this work, maybe it feels a little bit political, but ultimately tobacco wasn't a political issue. People started to realize that, you know, that was truly information that Americans deserve to have. And I think we're seeing the same thing here. And what's fascinating to me is that, you know, a great comparison, I think, as to what we're seeing, because like right now 13 states have legislation, you know, that's been introduced to label these ingredients because the federal government has done nothing on the issue. They just kind of stick to this 1990s think of it's substantially equivalent. And as these states are introducing legislation, you know, I was trying to think of something that had occurred that would be comparable or similar.
Right.
And the thing I found was in the absence of a federal seatbelt law, states decided to introduce seatbelt laws. And the first one was in New York in the early 1980s, which really isn't that long ago.
No.
And then around
around
the country, the state started introducing seatbelt laws. And it doesn't mean that every time somebody gets in a car, they're going to get in an accident. It just was a measure, a precautionary approach that could be taken to help protect the health of citizens. And I think that same mentality is what people are asking for. And so, you know, the science on GMOs, you got industry-funded stuff on the one hand, you got independent stuff on the other. That's he said, she said. That is right back to where our grandparents were with the tobacco industry. What we do know is that we have 527 million pounds more of these weed killers and chemicals. And so if GMOs are the delivery vehicle for those chemicals, that's what I want to know.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's with social media and the internet and the ability to deliver information quickly to get it out, it's changing the game. I think that is one factor that's changing the game. And then the other thing that cannot be underestimated at this point is the power of the moms. They are seeing firsthand what is happening to these kids. And, you know, a lot of the farmers that I have spoken with and worked with over the years, you know, they'll say, well, you know, we're just told that this is a fad. And my response to that is autism and cancer are not fads. And when people are diagnosed with these conditions, one of the first things they ask the doctor is, how can I change my diet? You know, what can I be doing differently? So much so that the doctors down in Houston at MD Anderson have called it the doorknob syndrome, where they have somebody in their office who's been diagnosed with certain conditions and they have their hand on the doorknob. And as they're turning to leave, they turn back into the office and they say, how can I change my diet? And those doctors have said, we need to upstream this information. You know, we need to get it out. So,
but it's a good point at which to ask you. You talked about the Nurses Association. Are the doctors, like in my world, I love my doctor. But she's really, there's a pill for that. You know what I mean? I don't do it, but because of this awakening, by and large, doctors, the American Medical Association, all of them, most of them, are saying, you know, there's not an app for that, but there is a pill for that. So are they, do you see that igniting? Do you see the big green dots connecting with the medical community in terms of traditional Western medical doctors to get on board and understand that it is our diet?
You know, I do. I think as younger doctors really come into the fold,
okay.
And you know, I wrote in the book, I said, you know, I had an older doctor and she gave us terrible advice. And again, you know, when I was asking these questions, it wasn't something she had studied in business school 40 years ago.
Right.
You know, GMOs weren't even on the scene when she was in medical school.
They still don't study nutrition too much in medical school. I have two
friends whose kids are
in medical school.
I mean, I think, you know, if you have a pediatrician, if you're fortunate enough to find a pediatrician that has young children, they know. They see it firsthand. They know what's going on, you know, in the preschools. You walk into any preschool and you know what's going on. And so, you know, my advice is always find a pediatrician that is going to be a partner with you on these issues with your kids, and really value the insight that you have as a mother and the questions that you raise. Those cannot be dismissed. And I think some of the older doctors, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics basically had to issue a position paper on organics because so many parents were coming into the doctor's offices asking these questions, and the doctors hadn't been trained. So they didn't know what the answer was. They didn't know how to answer what's the difference. Should I be feeding my kids organic? What should I be doing? And I think if you look at organic milk alone as one example, the fact that conventional milk here in the United States, these cows are pumped full of this artificial growth hormone.
Right.
And it results in mastitis and ovarian cysts and skin disease and, you know, a lot of these conditions that require an increased medication on those animals. It was for that reason that countries around the world said, we don't want it in our food. And so they never allowed it. Every single one of our trading partners, the big developed countries, did not allow this artificial growth hormone in their milk and to the cows making their milk or their cheese or their ice cream. And yet here in the U.S. we did. And consumers had a problem with it. And as that sentiment began to grow, it was actually Walmart that came in and said, you know what? If you're going to put milk in our stores, you can't have that artificial growth hormone in it. And that's an example of consumers in a company that people love to hate.
And the power of the mom and the power of bigger. So I will take a break on that note. Everybody stay here with me. Robin O'Brien.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative. Our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And I want you to think about that for a minute. If you have just joined us, our guest today for the 6 of our 8-part series on healthy eating, what am I eating and why should I care? It all starts with your fork, is a woman named Robin O'Brien. She is a visionary, a thought leader, a game changer, and I have to say a perfect storm forced to be reckoned with. She is also the founder of the visionary organization called Allergy Kids, which is focused on restoring the integrity of our food supply and the health of our children. And I ask all of you, can you think of a vision that is more important than that? So Robin, again, my thanks for you taking the time to join us and share your vision. And I'd like to shift a little bit to talk about Allergy Kids, because I think it wraps up this last segment so well. And if it's, I'd like to read your mission statement, because I read it several times and I know how important mission statements can be for the vision, to set the vision of the organization. So your mission statement is to make clean and safe food affordable to all children. Your goal is to restore the health of our children and the integrity of our food supply for families today and for future generations. So it's what I call a content-rich and very powerfully worded mission statement. So take a minute to share with us. Some people really don't know what does clean food mean? What are you talking about? What is clean food? Isn't our food clean? They spray it in Safeway before you buy the vegetables. So what do you mean clean food? Let's talk about that and safe food and some of the economic barriers to healthy food for all children. So let's start with clean food.
Well, you know, I mean, our food looks the same as it did when we were kids.
So true, but it's not.
But it's totally different.
It's not.
And, you know, it's different on a lot of levels. It's different with artificial growth hormones going into the cows. It's different with these genetically engineered ingredients that are literally hardwired so they can be repeatedly sprayed with chemicals.
Yeah, what lies
beneath?
Not
hardwired. Yeah, if they were not hardwired that way, they would die. The chemicals would kill the plants. So they've been hardwired to withstand these chemicals, you know? And you can't see that. You know, it doesn't look any different. The corn doesn't look any different, or a soybean doesn't look any different. And then the artificial dyes, you know, again, these dyes, and they've been removed from kids' products in the UK. I mean, M&M's, Skittles, Starburst, kids things.
the rewards candy. That some teachers give to kids in school for
right.
doing
these
so.
Artificial colors yeah. have been removed because of their link to hyperactivity. You know, when you really do a deep dive on these artificial colors and what they come from a petroleum-based product,
right.
you know? And, I mean,
right.
that just rips your heart out as a mom to think you've been putting that into your kid. So, you know, there is a lot in the food today that just simply was not there when we were kids. And so, you know, maybe the industry conducts these studies, and, you know, they're industry-funded studies. And anytime you have an industry-funded study, it's going to favor the industry. I mean, that's their job. But the studies also that have not been done is, you know, what is the combined effect of all of this on a pregnant mom or on a little boy, on someone with Alzheimer's or cancer or autism? What is that combination of artificial colors and artificial, you know, sweeteners, genetically engineered ingredients, this increased load of chemicals that are going on the crops, that synergistic toxicity is what it's called. What is that impact on all of us? And those are the questions we just don't know. And so the industry will say, well, correlation is not causation. And I totally get that. I was an analyst. But when you look at the rates of diseases in our country today and how hard and how fast these things have come on, it merits investigation, and where we can, we should begin to exercise precaution like all of our trading partners have, you know? And again, this gets back to this patriotic thing in me where I'm like, we have got to be the best version of ourselves as a country that we can be. And the only way to do that is to really protect the health of our families. And, you know, it's interesting with children because they have no voice politically, none at all. And they represent less than 30% of our population, but they are 100% the future of our country. So if we do not figure out a way to protect them, what does it look like 20 years from now? You know, cancer is the leading cause of death by disease in children under the age of 15. 1 in 3 Caucasian kids and 1 in 2 minority kids are expected to be insulin dependent by the time they reach adulthood. What does that look like 20 years from now? And why aren't we doing everything we can to stop this?
And, you know, you tell me, every bell and whistle in my entire body as a mother and a grandmother, as a citizen, it's like you ring all the bells and whistles, and it is quite emotionally overwhelming to me at times. Now, what about the economic difference, because I had Dawn Onderaga on my show from Environmental Working Group, and they work so hard to me to tell the truth. They don't take money from any of the sources that we don't want them to. And she did a show called Good Food on a Tight Budget, and trying to help everybody find ways to eat healthy without it costing appreciably more. What's your spin on that? Does it really cost more to eat healthy?
You know, I think anyone can do this on a budget, and as a mother of four, that was something I really focused on because, you know, you have people out there trumpeting this organic gospel, you
right.
know, and in a perfect world, yes, everybody could grow their own vegetables. And,
right.
You know, I mean, but I don't live in that world, and I'm
running
around with
I don't live in that world either.
And, you know, even on my best days, I mean, there are just weeks and times and periods where, you know, you are just run ragged. And so, you know, what can we do as real people, real families with real budgets? And, you know, thankfully there's a lot that you can do. I mean, the first thing anybody has to do if they're going to try to make any change with food is find a friend to do it with, because it is loaded. It's a loaded topic. It's more than just food. It's family. It's social. It's economic. It's financial. It's so much. And so if you have somebody to kind of lean on as you go through the transition, it makes it a lot easier, and it just makes it a lot more fun because people will roll their eyes and they are going to say things. And so find a friend first. And then, you know, the second thing is really just to try to eat less fake food. And once you really start to realize that that's what we've got, we have got a lot of fake stuff in our food. They take out sugar and they put in high fructose corn syrup. It's made in the laboratory. It's super sweet. But it also, not only does it sweeten the food, it helps preserve the shelf life of the food. So it's brilliant if you are doing the business model for a food company, because you think, okay, now I don't have to send trucks out and, you know, swap out all the bad bread and put in good bread, and things last longer on shelves, and it's good for the business model. And so we've replaced a lot of real ingredients with these kind of synthetic ones that are created in labs. And so, you know, I think families can do so much just by eating more real food. instead of the snack pack, you know, grab a banana, grab an apple. And yes, in a perfect world, everybody would be able to afford the organic apple that has, you know, reduced levels of pesticides and everything else. But, you know, as we discussed earlier, the budget nationally has not afforded that opportunity to all Americans. And that, to me, feels like a civil rights issue. That feels like a social justice issue.
It absolutely and positively is. It's abuse. Yeah. More attack on the, you know, the lower end of the socioeconomic scale, which facts will support. Who's getting the juvenile diabetes? All the people on the Native American reservations in our community. I mean, the juvenile diabetes among Native Americans, you know that, is epic. It's skyrocketed. So sorry to go on that little rant. Keep going.
Well, no, and I mean, I think it's exactly that, you know, that really it's naive to think that, you know, certain income brackets can afford to do this while others don't, and it doesn't hit our economy the same, because it does. You know, we're seeing the implications of diabetes and cancer and allergies and all of these conditions on our economy right now. Businesses are feeling the effect. Families are feeling the effect. And the model is not sustainable as it exists today. So it really, you know, has given us the opportunity to educate. And I think when you look at how we don't learn how to read overnight, you know, we don't teach a kid how to ride a bike overnight, to give ourselves permission to learn this, to sort of say, okay, we're starting at the beginning. We're sitting in this kindergarten classroom together and we're learning about food. And that is really as gentle as we have to be, to really realize that in the last generation, we really divorced ourselves from this knowledge. And it's not an impossible thing to learn, but we do have to find the courage to sit down together and learn. And, you know, I think we've just gotten so far away from food being real food. But it's not hard to learn. It takes compassion and it takes some time.
And the emotional part of me responds because, you know, if I have a guest on, and it goes back to your comment about Walmart, big is bad. And I'm saying, time out, people. Walmart moved the needle forward in terms of allowing some woman in the middle of Iowa who had a grocery store, you know, the nearest grocery store 30 miles away is a Walmart, and she could go there and buy organic milk that was affordable. Let's hear it from Walmart. I got some ugly Twitter activity a couple of weeks ago where I had Myra Goodman from Earthbound Farm on the radio, and they're saying she's a sellout, you know, on and on, big is bad, and support the local farmer. And I'm like, people, without Whole Foods pushing GMO labeling, guess where we'd be? Not with our local farmer making sure it happened for us. So bigger is not badder in this conversation. Do you agree? In some cases.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
in some
think,
cases.
You know, I think accountability is critical when
okay.
we're dealing with these big guys, you know?
Yes.
Transparency. Transparency is critical. You know, the fact that as these big companies move into the space, we better make darn sure that this definition isn't watered down.
Right.
Because, you know, already organic does allow for certain ingredients. So we really have to protect the integrity
yes.
of the definition. So, you know, there's a lot to be on watch, you know, and that can seem overwhelming on the one hand, but it also is just enormous opportunity on the other. And one of the things I like to highlight is, you know, really in front of us is this concept of this new food economy and jobs and businesses and sectors that need to be created. And so instead of looking at it as just this enormous thing we have to tackle, see the opportunity in it. And I think, you know, Walmart changed the conversation around that artificial growth hormone, and they could absolutely do the same thing here with organic food. Companies like Nestle, same thing. If Nestle decided that they wanted to put something on a box top and kick it back to small farmers,
game
you
changer.
Know, change
You're right.
System.
Game changer.
You know, I mean, they can yep. do that in a way that these smaller companies can't. And so, you know, as much as there's political pressure to get these politicians to do the right thing, the same thing with the food companies, the executives, they need to be able to go to their boards and say, there's so much consumer demand out there, we've got to make this change.
The power, I mean, it's just, I grew up in the 60s, so it's like the power of the people it can't be overrated. It's so underutilized. You talked about moms and mommy bloggers, and when a mother hen starts realizing her chicks are being harmed, it's like circle the wagons. And that's, you know, one of my big, you know, it makes me get up in the morning to say, I hope people listen to this show. I hope people follow this person on Facebook and Twitter, because we can take our power back. Nobody forces us to buy the packaged food and put it in our pantries. So it's what's so powerful about your message. So before,
but I also think too, I mean, there's an emotional connection to those brands, and if they were the brands our mothers fed us,
right?
That's a really strong emotional bond. You know? And so, you know, to really honor that, and I think with these companies, you know, we're starting to see a little bit of dialogue around the edges. You know, Cheerios, for example, or Grape Nuts. You know,
that was a great day, right? Non-GMO.
We hear you. You know, we hear you. And it's like to communicate with these brands and say, you know what? We've been together with you guys for 30, 40, however many years. We don't want to break up with you necessarily. We want you to grow up with us. And 20th century food doesn't work for 21st century families. So as these companies either choose to grow up with us and start to shift, which we're seeing in Kroger, you know, they're launching this huge organic line, or Chipotle, they're dumping a lot of this
right
artificial stuff, you know, those brands are absolutely being rewarded in the marketplace. The ones that are entrenching and saying they won't grow up with us, like Kellogg, laying off 7% of their workforce, they're seeing quarter over quarter down, you know. So it's in front of them right now, and instead of being scared, they should see it as an opportunity and simply move with the consumer. Don't even make it about the science at this point. Just say, this is obviously what the consumer wants. The reason she wants it is because her family is sick, you know, and she's waking up to the fact that our food is now full of all these ingredients that just flat out didn't exist 20 years ago. And she just wants that clean food, you know, food that is free from a lot of these additives and new ingredients.
And sorry, go ahead.
No, so, you know, so I really think that, to me, the quickest way through is through the marketplace. And, you know, to realize that these companies, inside of all these companies, are parents of kids with autism, or, you know, families that have cancer. The same thing with the grocery stores. You know, if your grocery store starts to expand its product selection, and that is a really great affordable option. I mean, Kroger and Safeway, Kroger especially, I mean, they're just, that sector, they are growing like crazy. They launched their Simple Truth and their organic Kroger-branded organics, and it's supposed to be a billion-dollar business within a two-year period. It's growing like crazy. So, you know, let these companies know that you appreciate it, that you appreciate that they're offering these products at a competitive price, because ultimately that will drive the change. And the companies that are making the stuff that's so junked up, they'll either have to get with the program or they'll become obsolete.
And it's almost okay. Like the other night I was watching TV. I don't watch much TV, but it was, you know, 11:30 at night, and I saw a commercial for Velveeta. And when you talk about comfort food and our memories, a happy memory for me is having grilled cheese and tomato soup on a Friday night. It was a warm, fuzzy feeling. It's comfort food. So those are the things that, now that I know about Velveeta, it's not real food. It's processed cheese food. There's no real food in Velveeta, folks, and I had to get over it. And so, like, I can't have Velveeta anymore. So we have about a minute and a half, and I would love to end on this up note. I read something about you that helped rescue me from going down what I call the rabbit hole of hopelessness and despair, which can happen for me because I'm not the analyst. I'm the emotional grandmom that says sometimes, you know, the sky is falling, but I know better and do better. So this is what someone wrote about you. Robin believes that while we can't change the beginning of our stories, we can change the end. And hope is the knowledge that change is possible. My voice hasn't shaken on the air in years. Hope is the knowledge that change is possible, even when it seems hard to imagine. What should we be imagining, Robin? And what should we all be holding out hope for? You've got 1 minute.
You know, we have a choice right now. We can either look back and continue to analyze this mess that we've inherited.
Right.
Or we can look forward at the opportunity that's in front of us. And we can take this landscape that we're standing on today with these conditions in our family, and we can say, how do we make it better for tomorrow? And in that is enormous opportunity. And I think it leverages the best in all of us. It takes this collective passion and talent and the skills that all of us share to build this better food system, so that when our kids ask us, what did you do when you learned this? we'll be able to say we built a better food system.
Well, you bring out the best in me, and thanks for showing up in my world and on the planet. Robin O'Brien, I celebrate you. Next show, Gary Nabhan, Seed Saver. Thanks, everybody.